Okay, Ruchim Avoim, glad to see everybody over here. And let me go through some of the questions that came up, and then either you can indicate on the chat if there are additional questions, or you can then mute yourselves and have a conversation. So let's begin with some of the things that I left off I didn't get to last time. And that is the preparation of certain items in the kitchen themselves. So the general rule is that if something is in the, if a non-cooking item, a non-cooking surface, if it's something where there it is near the active chametz preparation area or active chametz serving area, and or if it gets washed with chametz, so then it's advisable to either get a new one or to kasher it or to cover it. Right? If it's something which is not in the chametz prep area, so then it could just be wiped down. So, for example, somebody asked me about the garbage can in the kitchen. Now, that's no reason. Give it a regular, normal, the way one cleans a garbage can anytime. No reason that it has to get a special one for chametz. What about the Netilas Yadayim cup? It depends where the Netilas Yadayim cup is. If it's kept outside of the active kitchen area, no. So then clean it with cold water, and you can use it in Pesach. On the other hand, if it's something which is sitting on the counter all the time, and certainly if it's something that is washed together with the chametz, so then it would make sense to put it away and to get a special Netilas Yadayim for Pesach. Baby bottles. So baby bottles, the different suggestions, but I think it's really the same thing. If a person, if the baby bottle someone is using hangs that around the chametz on the table. The one cleans them on the chametzic surfaces. One washes them with the chametzic dishes. Then it's better to get new baby bottles. If it's on the other end, it's a very young child, so the bottles are used. They're not really used in the active chametz area, and they're not used at the table. So at that point, why not just wash them well, and and again, if they're not washed with chametz, so wash them well in cold water, and or one could, in that case, it might be an extra care is to just pour some hot water over them because they can, that plastic can withstand hot water. So if it would really be a chametzic item, it wouldn't kosher plastic. But in this case, where pouring hot water over it is a chumrah, okay, so then that's something that I would do for plastic for baby bottles if they are not actively in the chametzic area. There is a, let's take the urn. The urn that one uses on for Shabbos and for Yom Tov. So if one keeps that urn away from the chametzic area, it's in a different surface. One goes to make tea, to make coffee, so then it would be fine to wash it down. I would, if one knows that one never used it with any kind of oatmeal, with any kind of chametzic item, so it would be fine to wash it down. If one is concerned that one may have used it with a chametzic item, one may have, or chametz may have splattered over it, so then that could be a reason to get a new urn for Pesach, or one could also, or if the, one could get boiling hot water over the metal part of the urn. In that case, one can pour hot water over any part of the urn, but you don't want the hot water to get into the crack where the electric is. So another option would be to take tinfoil and to cover the bottom of the urn. So that way the it's plastic, you protect the electric area, and you don't have to worry about something splattering and bouncing off the urn and then bouncing off onto the chametz, onto the Pesach thing. On the other hand, if the urn is in the active chametzic area, someone's preparing, there's always preparing chametz over there. So then, in that situation, again, it would be advisable to have a different urn for Pesach. Alpidin, a person, especially this year where we are limiting the numbers of trips that we take and we're limiting the stores that we go to. So it would be entirely reasonable that even an urn which sits with the chametz, again, I can give you some general rules. I may have to actually see it to give specific rules or take a picture of it. But the general rule would be to wash it with cold water, and probably the best thing would be to take some tinfoil and cover it. It could be a project for one of the kids to cover it in a way that that it's not near the electric, but in such a way that you don't have to, that you really have a separate surface, so to speak, and because all you're afraid of with the urn is things splattering backwards and forwards. All right. So again, to be clear, with kitchen items that we don't use for cooking, but they are things which are in the kitchen, whether it's baby bottles or whether it's Natil Shadaim cups or whether it's or whether it's these urns. So if they're in an active chametz area, the preference would be to put them aside, get another one for Pesach. If that's not a situation that we can do for this year, it means an extra trip outside. I would say in that case, I would either the Tisudan cup, I would anyway just use another cup of glass, not a big deal, but the urn is a big deal. So then I would take tinfoil, cover it, and that's probably the best way to deal with it, the easiest way to deal with it. If it's something that was never in the active chametz area and don't plan it to be in an active Pesach area, so then I think also one should then washing it down with cold water should be good enough.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
Sorry. If our Netilas Yadayim cup is all silver, are we able to kosher that? Like, can we?
Or you certainly, you probably can kosher it. Let's discuss that for a moment. We'll circle back. The items which can be are metal items, right? Glass items we do not kosher for Pesach. Sometimes glass items are only, we're only considering kosher for chumra reasons. But if something which is a chometz stick glass item, we would not kosher for Pesach. And obviously an earthenware item we would not kosher, but a metal item we would kosher. The basic rules for koshering are that it should be a one-piece deal. If it's a two pieces, if it's a plastic handle and a metal blade, then we would not kosher that. If it's two, if the metal blade and the metal handle are separate, like a silver set, so then we also would not kosher it. It wouldn't be safe to kosher it because you could easily unglue the handle from the blade, but we wouldn't kosher it. Anytime there's a crack in the a crack of any significance in an item, so then we avoid koshering it because we're afraid that this could be some real chametz that, or the truth is milchus flesh as well, it's caught in the crack. So let's say you have a person has a pot with a handle that is attached to it. So we would undo the handle, take off. If one cannot undo the handle, then it would be highly questionable if we can kosher it. That would depend if it's adhering from the outside through or only from the outside. Let's say you have a lid and it has a screw that screws to the top and holds on to the top. So when you look inside the lid, you see it's not a smooth surface. So we wouldn't kosher that. We could consider taking it apart and making it a smooth surface. So also that we could do. So if it's not a, if it's a kiddush cup with very, very intricate designs, so then where things could easily get caught inside the design, fairly intricate. So then we would refrain from kashing. If it's a simple surface design without anything that's deep, that would not be a problem. So coming back to the Netilas Yadayim cup, this metal, if the surfaces are smooth and you don't have a lot of intricate joints, then one can certainly kasher it. The kashering is probably a chumrah because you didn't cook anything hot in it. What happened to it? Maybe something hot splattered. Maybe you washed it in your dishwasher with lots of soap. So there would be, so in that case, the answer is it could be kashering. It could be kashered. I think it might be overkill, but it could be kashered as long as it's not too intricate. But those are the restrictions on kashering, are that if something, if the concern that we have is that I boiled chametz inside of it, so then if it's metal, I boil it in water and that's how I neutralize it. If I baked chametz inside of it, then I have to make that baking pan almost red hot. That's very, very hard to do. So when you have a surface, when you have an item that was used for the baking of chametz, again, I always want to discuss to see if there's a way if it becomes important. But however, that is harder to kasher. If the surface only became chametz because something splattered onto it, so again, that's when we pour water on it. There is something in between, which is not so easy to orchestrate. And that's when you make something hot enough that it could burn a piece of paper. That's hard to orchestrate. So that would be good enough in place of boiling. But boiling is usually an easier thing to do. How do you kasher at home? Take a large pot and boil of water. If it's a chametzik pot, we have to kasher the pot first. It's a minute to let the water overflow so that the entire pot is kasher. Anything that we want to kasher can't be used for a hot within 24 hours of when we kasher it. And then we drop. Let the water cool down from kashering the pot. Pour the water out. Fill it up again. And then create a boiling roll, a rolling boil. And the rolling boil should be obviously not near the surface because you don't want to have water all over the place. And then item by item, you drop it in. We like to have, the strong preference is to have a situation where you have 60 times the water and of the item. So you have to imagine, I want a kasher spoon before I drop it in. Can I imagine 60 spoons being under the surface of this water? That's what, then the reason that we wait 24 hours is so that any taste that's infiltrated it and gets and exits will be a poor taste, and therefore it will not remake the item chametz. So, question was raised: are there other restrictions on kashering? In other words, when do I decide whether to kasher or to buy something new? So, If the kashering is a lechadchila dekedin, kashering is not easy. It means cleaning it well, and sometimes the item itself again is a complicated item. So then it might require a judgment call whether it's a kasher or not. But a straightforward, smooth item, so kashering I think is lechadchila. There is a minhag that evolves from the time of the Gemara that when we're able to afford new kelim for Pesach, so then it's a good thing to do. Again, this year, because we are trying to limit our movements, so it would be a year where we probably would veer to kasher rather than buy something new, or to buy disposable rather than buying. Rather than kashering. I was surprised by a statement which I did not see in print. So it was part of a conversation. So again, I don't know the context fully, but it, but quoted Rav Shechter as saying that he prefers to buy something new, not tovel it and sell it to a goy and borrow it back from the goy rather than kasher. So again, I didn't see the context. I can't say that it is a validated or verified position. But that is that. If that is the balance, again, this year, I think we would rather, I guess if you can order something and have it delivered, rather than kashering, the one thing that does concern about kashering, it does mean having hot boiling water around. And if Baruch Hashem and his little kids around, it's is a nerve-wracking situation. So in that situation, I certainly would have a preference for buying new rather than having a lot of boiling water around if the kids are around. Does that, any other questions? The one thing that's very important to appreciate is that when a person kashers something for Pesach, there's an added benefit. And that is that you can then switch from milk to meat or meat to milk. In other words, during the course of the year, so we are hesitant, there's a minhag from the Magen Avraham not to switch backwards and forwards from milchus to fleishus to fleishus to milchus. So there are situations where that minhag doesn't apply, but in situations, the run-of-the-mill situations where you have a knife or a pot and it would better suit you for fleishiks or for milchiks, so then one can take advantage of this. And if, I don't think one can kasher it especially for Pesach for this purpose, but if one is kashering it for Pesach, then one after it is, then it becomes not only neutralized of the chametz, it becomes neutralized of any identity or denomination that it has. Any other questions about kitchen items we did put up, the ICBC put up several videos that Rabbi Center put together about kashering. I have not had a chance to see them yet, but I have a lot of trust in Rabbi Center. And it was done together with members of the ICBC. I think Rabbi Belazon was involved, so I'm sure that they're good. If he suggests something that is stricter than I'm suggesting, so, or that's more lenient, please let me know so that I can educate myself.
I have a
now,
question.
When it comes to Pesach products, so let me just walk back something. Let me just address something that we thought about that we discussed last time we met about meat and meat poultry that one bought at a time before Pesach. So as I was thinking about it more and more, I would agree with what we concluded last time, that the washing of these things should take place when the meat is or poultry is not frozen. I think it would be hard to wash well a piece of meat or poultry that's frozen. So again, just in case those who are not with us last time, if I have a piece of meat or a piece of fish that was prepared in a kitchen where wasn't prepared kosher Pesach. So then if it is in any way treated, then one cannot kosher for Pesach. Anyway, if it's chopped meat, cannot be kosher for Pesach. However, if it is a solid piece of meat, a solid piece of fish, and it is not processed at all, not marinated at all, the only concern I have is it was in the same kitchen as marinades, it may not be Pesachtik, or maybe crumbs that weren't pasted were homestick crumbs. So then a careful wash of the piece of meat or of the piece of fish under running water should make that item usable for Pesach.
Rabbi Neuberger, I have a question.
Yeah.
It's Shana. Regarding appliances in the kitchen. If you have, for example, like an immersion blender that has been sitting around, let's say, a few years, likely wasn't used, but might have been used. You don't know if it's used for meat or milk. Is that something that you could use again if it has been sitting around for a long time and not used?
So an immersion blender, if I understand correctly, is used for cold. Is that correct?
It could be used in a hot soup as well. You put it in, so assuming you don't know.
Right.
As opposed to going out and buying a
total blank, total blank, whether it's, you don't know where this paste, the chomis, the milchus, or fleishiks.
No, it's something I've inherited from my parents, and I just don't know. I would buy a new one, but, you know, I'm trying not to.
No. So if you can't, it comes down to the question of whether it is too intricate to be kashered by boiling. So if you can take a picture of it and send it over to me, let me have a look at it and see. If there are lots of nooks and crannies, then we probably would not...
Okay, I'll do that.
It could be used for a chomis. It can be used for that. I understand for it can be used for only for a parv soup. No, for milk soup. Wouldn't be used for fleishiks.
It could be used for any for
fleishiks also. Okay, yeah. So then let me have a look at it. And we'll see.
Okay, thank you.
We'll see if it can be kosher.
I just have one question. Sorry.
Sure, please.
When washing meat or poultry, it's meat yerefetergron. Do you have to wash it before Pesach, like to rinse it off? A cut of chicken.
Yeah, we would wash it before Pesach. Yeah, and we wash it before Pesach, preferably in a sink, like in a washing sink, in a. A sink that's near the washing area, the laundry sink.
So even if it's frozen?
Well, if it's a situation where the butcher is telling you he's sure that he did not have anything else out when he was, basically that it's a Pesach in the kitchen all year round, but he's nervous about it. So then I would say you can do it in Pesach. But if it's a situation where the butcher is saying, no, anything can happen in the kitchen when it's not a Pesach thing. So then I think we should prepare it before Pesach. Yeah, we have to thaw it before Pesach and wash it before Pesach.
Okay, thank you.
So a toddler's pacifiers, do we have to have new ones for Pesach? I think it depends how feisty the child is. But generally speaking, as long as they are, that should be washed very, very well. And then once they're clean, I don't see an issue with them. I don't see why we would look at a pacifier as hanging around the chametz. Certainly not hot chametz. So I think as long as it's washed carefully, then we should be okay. Let's discuss Mechiras Chomet. Unless there are other questions in the kashering area.
One more question. Hi, it's sure. Jessica Kornwasser. I apologize if the Rev covered this last time, but with a metal blech that, you know, the old-fashioned kind that you just put over your burner so that you could your light, what's the story with kashering that?
So metal blech is very easy to kasher, clean it, hasn't been used in 24 hours, then just pour hot water over it. That'd be one way to kasher it. You can put it in a laundry sink, boil up water, and pour water over it. Another way to do it would be one could theoretically steam it, and one could also cover it with a double covering. Put the foil on top, two layers of foil. The downside of the covering is that it tends to rip and tear. So then you have to fix it up and Chol HaMoed all of those things. The worst case scenario is that either a person, either something spilled over on it. So either those forms of kashering work, or that a person may have taken a challah and warmed it up, So I think that covering it would certainly work in that case. And I think that, I think Hagolah would also be okay in that case. I think so.
Let's say your blech is like very stained, like has, like it's very hard to clean it because it has like burnt things on it.
Right. So, so if it's burnt in, and then that means that when you put your hand on top of it, you don't feel anything. So it's a stain that's baked in that you don't have to worry about. You may have more peace of mind by covering it, but halpidin, once it's baked in, then you don't have to worry about it.
Rabbi Neuberger, I have a quick question.
Sure.
If you have drawers that hold only foil pans or paper goods or plastic silverware, if we wipe those out, can we continue to use them on Pesach?
Yeah. Nowadays, our drawers are made of such smooth materials that they can be washed very, very well. There was a time when when drawers are made of wood, and they often, over the course of time, they'd become chipped and nicked. So then we got nervous about things getting stuck inside. But over here, the drawer that you're describing anyways is a drawer that never had any chomistic food inside of it. It only had chomistic kelim inside of it. And those chomistic kelim put away when they were washed and clean. So that wouldn't be that would be fine. So you take everything out, wipe it down, make sure that you don't see any crumbs inside, and you're good to go.
Rabbi Neuberger, sorry, I have a question. Tzudi Weiss.
Sure.
So the Rav just said about the blech, that if it's not sticky and if you don't feel anything on the surface, you can use it. But I believe that Rav Neuberger said last week that was not the situation with towels.
Towels. If a stain was, if you wash a towel in hot water with soap.
Right.
So then it is also okay. I think towels I am more nervous about because it's towel shed.
Uh-huh.
So I just know it's practically seen in the same way.
Okay.
Sometimes it's a cloth shed. So to have a general rule about towels that may be stained, I think we can get into trouble because you can end up having, a shedding towel. So I'd rather, in principle, it's the same.
Okay, that's what jogged my thinking.
Yeah, in practice, it's a little bit different. Yeah.
Okay, and if I could just piggyback on the last question, like I have, it's like a plastic three-drawer thing where I keep all my silverware, where I keep all the plastic things. So again, the only things that are in there are forks, knives, and spoons, but we definitely use our chametz hands a whole year to open and close the drawers. Right. But as long as I wash it well and clean it, I can use it for Pesach.
That's right. I wash it clean in cold water. There's never, and because it's only, it's handheld with chametz,
right?
So then that's what Bedigas chametz is. That's why
Everyone
cleans it well with a shmata.
Right, okay. Because there's no question that like chametz hands are on there like a whole year. There's no question about it.
Otherwise, we'd have to, I'll go on Pesach programs.
Okay.
Chametz, right?
Okay, thank you.
Chametz hands are all over the place. So, no, not to get nervous. Not to get nervous about things. You can't.
Thank you.
Yeah, you have to hold yourself back from getting nervous about it. That's what we wash it for.
Great.
That's why we look at it. And that's also why when one prepares the home for Pesach, so especially this year, first of all, because many of us are thrust into it, and because, Baruch Hashem, many of us have children at home. So it's... You know, cleaning your room for Pesach, b'li'an har, with children around, is it's often very, very discouraging. So, it's a bracha, Baruch Hashem. That's the bracha that you want. So, it's a little bit hard this way. So one doesn't have to look for tiny, tiny crumbs. One looks for chametz that's visible, right? Not for the invisible. So, you go into a room. Al pidin, you don't have to pull everything out. You have to move everything around and look and see. Look in the drawer, move everything in the drawer, see if there's any pretzels there, any Kit Kat bars there, anything that was stashed away from a Purim, from a Simchas Torah. So that's what you're looking for. But you're not looking for crumbs. A few crumbs there, all right. No one's going to end up ingesting any crystal of those crumbs. who knows what they are. And second of all, those crumbs in a drawer in the bedroom are never going to end up on your dinner table. So that's enough to worry about. You go look at a room. You're looking to see if there's, it's not easy because it often has to organize stuff that's on the floor. But once the room is organized, then the looking for chametz is not doesn't mean that you're wiping down every single surface over and over. The kitchen, you have to be more careful. Outside of the kitchen, so then one's looking for pretzels and for Kit Kat bars and maybe a Cheerio here and there. So again, in the children's toys, it's work. I'm not saying it's easy. But in the bedrooms, in the closets, if one finds it to take over one's life, so to speak, walk it back, as we discussed last week. This is not what you're looking for. You're looking for things that are edible, and things that are noticeable, things that would catch your eye. Size of a kazayas is a cubic inch. So now in the kitchen, there one is more careful washing surfaces down. Again, without going crazy, the shmata, make sure it's clean. Once it's clean, so then go on to kashering as you described. But you feel comfortable to ask as you go along. Some of the questions that came up about products. So I think one of the common questions is about milk. We do have a practice to have kosher Pesach milk because milk does have some additives that sometimes come from a chametzic origin, and sometimes milk is processed in factories where they make milk with different ingredients. So we do try to have kosher Pesach milk, and nowadays I believe that kosher Pesach milk is readily available. In other words, I believe that there are many, many brands that are OUP and Chavkepi and so on and so forth. If one can't find kosher Pesach milk for whatever reason, then the practice is to buy the milk before Pesach. And nowadays it's much easier because nowadays milk has something in it which makes it last a lot longer than it used to last. And I can always take milk in Erev Pesach and freeze it if you're going to use it on Pesach. But again, kosher Pesach milk, it says kosher Pesach, it's fine. It does not have to be Chol of Yisrael. If the person has Chol of Yisrael all year round, good. If you don't have Chol of Yisrael all year round, then on Pesach the same thing, just with the kosher Pesach indication. And if that becomes unavailable, then one buys any Pesach, any milk Erev Pesach, before Pesach. When it comes to lactate, so I was asked about lactate. I believe that the Star K approach of lactate is that lactate milk may be used in Pesach if purchased before Pesach. Right? Lactate caplets may contain chametz. So the caplets we should not use in Pesach. There's a big however over here, and that is that sometimes children have very, very specific needs over the course of an 8-day period, and that we have to discuss that and figure it out. Sometimes an adult can have certain kinds of situations where the lactate milk doesn't work, the lactate caplets are necessary. So that's a conversation that we have to have and have to figure out how we can either to do more research or to figure out how we can use the caplets. But the beginning position is lactate milk before Pesach, and the lactate caplets better not to use. Question about eggs. Can one eggs on Pesach? So eggs, the reason that eggs, there was a practice not to buy eggs in Pesach is because eggs used to be washed with a chametz stick solution, and the chicken feed is often chametzik. So the practice was to buy the eggs before Pesach and wash them before Pesach. Nowadays, again, I've never seen, I'm not that much in the kitchen, but I've never seen any chicken feed hanging around my eggs. So nevertheless, the many rabbis say that we should still maintain the practice of the on the Starakei. Starakei says that to this day, chicken feed may contain chametz. And therefore, it's customary to have eggs that were bought before Pesach. I think that includes eggs that were bought by a kosher store before Pesach. So again, the practice, the minhag is to, I think we should maintain that minhag of buying the eggs before Pesach, buying eggs from a kosher store on Pesach. If one gets stuck and one doesn't have access to either one, and it's Pesach. So again, I would think that if one, I would hesitate to do this, but if one is in a pressed situation and you look at the box of eggs, you don't see anything there but eggs, so I think we should be okay.
So we should wash them off before Pesach, or we don't have to?
If you buy them before Pesach, I don't think you have to wash them off. No, okay. No.
All right.
No. So maybe if you buy them before Pesach, again, if somebody here has any experience of ever seeing anything stuck to your eggs, so then let me know to reevaluate. But now, one of the interesting chidushim of this year when it comes to products is that when it comes to hand sanitizers, ideally buy everything before Pesach. The Star K is just Chad B'Chalak said that due to present concerns, any hand sanitizer can be used and it should be purchased before Pesach. So when it comes to soaps in general, our position has been when it comes to soaps that if it's hard soaps, then one can use them on Pesach. Hard soaps, unless it says on the box oatmeal, says in the box chomistic soap, and then that would do it. But it says that any kind of soap that is hard does not require any concern for Pesach. If it's something that is liquid and it rolls and it has an alcohol content, so then I would try to avoid that kind of toiletry over Pesach. However, when it comes to, again, this year, when it comes to hand sanitizers, when uses them, when it was out any with any hesitation, both the ones that you have in the house and then the ones that if you're in a facility, you should certainly use the hand sanitizer, which is there without question, without hesitation. Liquid soaps, I believe that our liquid soaps are not alcohol-based, so then a lot of them are creamy, they're not liquids, so those also can be purchased preferably before Pesach, but can be purchased and used without hashgacha. Toiletries in general, if they are again liquid, so then we have a preference to the difference between the preference of buying something before Pesach is that. There's an important point. The preference of buying something before Pesach is that if there would be any chametz inside of it before Pesach is bottle, it becomes insignificant. But we have a rule, one of the ghosts of Pesach is that it's not bottle. That chametz on Pesach is osu b'mashu, even the smallest amount. Right, that's really what gets everybody nervous in Pesach. Correctly, because there is a din that chametz at Pesach is not bottle. However, that's only chametz when Pesach comes in. Before Pesach, chametz is bottle. So if I have a situation where I'm concerned, like with the eggs, where they used to be concerned that there might be chametz there. Okay, before Pesach. So then it became insignificant. The same thing with their, if I'm afraid that there might be some grain alcohol involved in this item. So then I would buy it before Pesach. Right. On the other hand, if I'm in a in a doctor's office, I'm in a public area, and the importance of hand sanitizing is so crucially important now. So then I wouldn't worry about the chumra. I would just say use whatever sanitizer is there, whatever soap is there. All right.
Can I ask the Rebbe a question?
Yeah.
What about using liquid body wash or shampoos if they have chametz stick ingredients? Does that matter?
So I don't know. If they have chametz stick ingredients, I don't know why we wouldn't get non-chametz stick ingredients. Right? And get ones, get regular ones. Now, if the issue is that I have a sanitizer with chametz stick and I cannot get another sanitizer, the answer is yes. It means I have to make an extra trip to the store. Yes, I should use it. I should not get another one. If I have a body wash that has the chametzik ingredients, so that's not edible. No one's eating that. So nivsal mechilas kalev. So then again, if I'm going to the store anyways, we'll get one without a chametzik ingredient. I would not make a special trip to the store. I wouldn't spend any more time outside to replace that. So the answer is I would use it. But if I don't have to use it, if I can switch it at no cost, then I would. Is that good? Is that clear?
Okay, thank you.
We're good? Again, if it's not worth it, mitzada din is mutter. So I would not make an extra trip to worry about that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, water. So water without any additives does not need a hechsher in Pesach. Any water without additives is okay. Water with additives, you'd have to ask me and have to look into it.
Hi, Rabbi?
Yeah.
Hi, it's Cookie Gans. So the question about the water, for example, Poland Springs has plain water, and then they have also sparkling water with cherry flavor lemon. And I could not ascertain whether they're all bottled in the same plant or not.
So again, the position of the Star Cable Confirming, I think they say that as long as there are no additives, then it's any bottled water. Okay, any bottled water. Any bottled filtered spring or distilled water does not require certification. Even if it includes fluoride or minerals, the following waters do require kosher Pesach certification. That's flavored waters. If they contain citrate or zinc latte, and this I was unaware of, but that we shouldn't buy the 5-gallon containers because apparently they're reused. That's a chiddush to me. I didn't realize that. But the answer to your question is that one doesn't have to be concerned about what's going on in the plant as long as the bottled water itself is water without additives.
So we should not be using our 5-gallon water coolers?
I'll have to look into that. Again, I've never, I have to look into it because I'm... I don't know. I just read that just now. I'd be surprised because it's all then cold, but I'll look into it. I'll check it out. Right. So can one to use? If I have tinfoil and I've used that particular tinfoil box and that box of plastic bags and I've used it, it's open and I've used it in my chometzik kitchen, so I would get a new box of tinfoil and a new box of plastic bags for Pesach. If it's the kind of thing where you're stuck right before Pesach and you run out, so you look at it very, very carefully and you don't see anything which is chometzik, then you can then you could use it, but lechadchila I would get a new box if it was open in my kitchen already. Yeah. Oh, so let me, this is a very important point that somebody made up here. When I was talking about this, very important, I'm sorry if I thank the person who sent this in the chat. When I was talking about of covering the blech, I only mean the top side of the blech, not the side of the blech that's near the fire. All right? The tin foil that I was talking about is on top of the blech, not under the blech. And even that sometimes gets very, very hot. So that's why I guess there is a preference to do the kashering. But as this person wrote, when covering the blech, the bottom should not be covered, only the top. Okay. Somebody needs smart water, with electrolytes. Again, that's please text me so that I can look it up for you.
Can I see a question?
Yeah. Please.
And
again? Oh, please, I couldn't hear. Let's start again.
Do you need a new broom and dustpan?
New brooms and dustpans. There probably is a. I don't think so. I think just again. I think the dustpan, just wipe it down. Look at it. Wipe it down. And that's fine. And the brooms, I think you have to just shake them out very well.
Then inspect it. Thank you.
It could be hard to shake out, hard to clean, but if you can shake it out and there's nothing there, so then that should be okay.
Thank you.
When it comes to one of the questions that came up about this year is mechiras chametz, selling chametz stick stuff. Many people have a practice not to sell chametz gomor, not to sell breads and cakes and cereals. This year, there are many people who have stocked up on breads, cakes, and cereals, and they did so either because they were concerned or they are concerned it was going to be. So this is a year when we would rely, even if a person's practice is not to rely on Mechira for the sale of chametz gomor, it's a chumra, but it's a chumra that when only that has any stringency, it's a stringency. So that means that when it's in a situation where I have a special need, then we weigh the stringency. So in this particular case, this year, a person has lots of bread and is concerned that there's an item that won't be readily available. Yes, and then this is the year to sell it. And one does not have to do Hataras Nedara, because anytime you have a minug and there's a particular requirement of one particular year, and you tend to go back to the minug. This particular year, you can't do it. So then that's does not require a Taurus Nedara, because the initial understanding was I'm taking this minug, this chumra, when it doesn't become very, very difficult. That's the idea of taking it as a minug. Coming back to the blech question, if a person used both sides interchangeably, so again, my preference would be to pour water over both sides, but if one is not doing that, one only has to cover the part that is facing up the cooking surface. One does not and should not cover the bottom. But it's okay. If you have a blech and you're not sure which side is up, so you want to cover instead of koshering it, two layers of foil on one side and the other side is okay. Okay, there are questions about vitamins. So vitamins, I would very much encourage people to check the kosher Pesach vitamins and see if they work. If the kosher Pesach vitamins don't work, so then again there is a concern this year about maintaining one's health in the best possible way. And again, it's not my field, but if taking the vitamins are important for maintaining one's health in the top situation, so then anything which doesn't taste like has no taste to it, so then one should take it lechanchila, one should not hesitate. If it's something that has a taste to it, so again, then I would say, first of all, call the company. It may not be a problem to begin with. It may have no chametz, and that's not a problem. If something is kidney is not a problem at all. Kidney is in a tablet form is not a problem. Kidney is for health reasons, not a problem. So kidneys would not be a reason to refrain from anything any year when it comes to vitamins, when it comes to anything that's health related. One of the questions which I was asked to discuss is a few interesting questions. Is there any preference to having a round kara? Person has, you have to have a round, it can be square. So I don't see any reason why a kara has to be round. Round, it can be square. I'm not sure if it be triangular. The idea behind the kara, behind the Seder plate, is to have the items on the plate in a way in which they are easily accessible to the Baal Seder, and that he doesn't have to go over, he doesn't have to trip over something. In other words, we want the Seder to be organized so that when it comes time to Karpus, the Karpus is the first thing. When it comes time for Moror, then I've used the Karpus already. We don't have a situation where my Chereses is in front of my Karpus. Because then one has to be ma'aber la mitzvahs. One has to go over a mitzvah and say, I need the Karpus now, not the Chereses. So that the Haliyah Mahalacha, that one should never walk by a mitzvah and ignore it. So, but the organization of the Seder plate is primarily to accommodate that concern. And then there's the Machlokes and Ashkenazim and the Chachmei Kabbalah, but organizing some of the items side by side, right side, left side, that's already Kabbalistic. But I'm not aware of any reason from a non-Kabbalistic concern of whether it has to be of any particular shape. Was a question that was raised about if a person has a chumra stringency to have shmura matzah. Now, the just explain the idea behind shmura matzah is that all of our matzah is shmura matzah, because shmura matzah means that all matzah has been watched carefully that it didn't become chametz. So when it comes to matzah, there's an extra layer of supervision to make sure that the process of the baking the matzah has been watched supremely from the beginning till the end. Right? Other items, the mashgiach can turn his back, he can trust that systems stay in place, he can speak to people who are there. Matzah, they have to have all eyes on deck, so to speak. So all matzah is shmura. There's a machlokes, when does this extra layer of shmura start? Does it start from the moment it was harvested, or does it start when it became flour and you're about to make dough out of it? So what is technically called matzah shmura means that the extra layer of supervision began already in the field. So that's a machlokes that's required, and we paskin is not required. As long as it's been watched from the time that it became flour, that's good enough. That's all matzahs like that. And then matzah shmura is matzah that was watched earlier. Right. Now, in addition, matzah has to, when they're going to eat the night of Seder, so that matzah has to be watched and has to be processed for the sake of eating matzahs Leil Seder. So again, our matzahs, I believe, have that assumption that they've all been watched for the mitzvah of Leil Seder. What we call shmura matzah means that there was an extra care involved in watching it from the time of the harvest, and extra care was given to make sure that everything was done, having in mind that we're going to have it Lil Seder, even though a lot of it is used for the rest of Pesach. Now, some people have a preference to have what we call Shmur Matzah Ala Pesach. What's the preference based on? They believe that it's based on the way that one reads the Rambam, that the extra layer of Hashgacha is not an extra layer of Hashgacha. The extra layer of Hashgacha is not to make it more attached to the mitzvah of matzah Seder night. The extra layer of Hashgacha is to make them extra free of any chashash chametz. All right, so that is not the common practice of Klal Yisrael. Common practice of Klal Yisrael is to have matzah all over Pesach that's been watched from the time of the powder, of the grinding. But again, there are Jews who have a practice to have Shmur Matzah all of Pesach. Now, in the question that was raised, if that is the practice of the parents, they have to be makbid in this for children. The answer, I think, is no. That children below the age of, even below the age of bar mitzvah, if I have a particular chumrah, so I'm not, I shouldn't impose it on my children. If I have a minhag from my parents, from their grandparents, then that's the kind of thing I should encourage my children to keep as well. If I have a stringency, I know it's not required of them, so I don't impose my chumras on my children. They have to, they'll decide if they want my chumras or not want my chumras. So a husband shouldn't impose his chumras on his wife, and his wife shouldn't impose her chumras on her husband. That's chumras and chumras. So there's stringencies. So there is. I don't think one should be mechanech, what has to be one doesn't go out of one's way to discourage one's child of doing things that you think are good. But I don't think there's any reason why a person should go out of his way to have shmur matzah for children. When it comes to baby cereal, so baby cereal does require that it's certified for Pesach, even rice cereal. Even though because the rice cereal is often made on chumistic equipment, so even the rice cereal has to have a kosher Pesach certification. And again, any questions that come up, you'll text me and I'll probably take a picture of the relevant information and get it back to you so you're able to make life, usually makes life easier. Oh, so good. So let's just discuss. Let's go over the Tvilas Kalim again. All right, Tvilas Kalim again. So, generally speaking, items that are made of metal or glass, and they are used in food preparation, go to mikveh, have to be toveled. All right. Items which are electric items, which certainly cannot be used unless they're plugged in, have no use. So I don't think that they require tevila for several reasons. But the most prominent reason is because the manufacturer says they'll get ruined if one puts them underwater. Items that are electric and you could theoretically use them without them being plugged in, I would say the same thing. The manufacturer says that they could get ruined. So again, there'll be many people who say, but I tovled it, then I dried it for 3 weeks and everything was fine. It took a blow dryer. Okay, but I cannot take responsibility for that. And if I, I cannot take responsibility neither for the safety nor for the welfare of the equipment. So this is So I have to tell you that the manufacturer says you could ruin the item and then you could short, then that's how we base our halachic position as well. So since when an item cannot be toivled, Rav Shlomo Zalman said, Bishato. Rav Shechta says, It doesn't require tefillah. Why does it require tefillah? Because the iser of using an item that hasn't been toiveled is that I ignored the mitzvah of tefillah. But if I can't do tefillah, I haven't ignored it. Similarly, if I have no mikveh in town, I have not ignored the mitzvah of tefillah. I would argue, I don't know if anyone agrees with me, that if I am self-quarantined, and certainly if I have to be quarantined, then it's equivalent of not having a mikveh in town. So I don't think there would be a chiyuv of tefillah. Now, having said that, there are few easy solutions. One solution is that Shulchan Aruch discusses, and that is the situation where on Shabbos, and I haven't told my keles, I'm mafkir. I say, it doesn't belong to me. Tell three people. I call three people and I say, should know, I just bought this item. It's $30, $40. Eh, I'd rather be mafkered and run the risk that you'll come and take it from me than go out now and make an extra trip to the Kalim Mikra. Okay, that's a good hefker. It has to be a real hefker. It has to be a good hefker. It has to be that if somebody comes, there's a famous story that that Talmud knew that Aaron Lichtenstein followed this practice when it came to electric items because he didn't think he could be titled them. So he was mafkir them. So there's a story where a young man was Purim time and he took Reb Aaron's, his electric toaster, or he took his electric mic, I don't know what he took, but one electric item, he walked off with it. Okay. So when he, after Purim, he came to return it. So Ron wouldn't take it. B'shum Panava, he would not take it back. He said, imagine how terrible the Talmud felt. He wouldn't take it. He said, I was mafker. It's not mine. Why don't you bring it back to me? So it has to be a real hefker. But again, this year, it could be a real hefker. And an alternative would be to sell it to a guy. So there are two easy ways to sell it to a guy. One is to go online, to go to the Beth Abraham website, where it says Pesach, it says Kalim, Chivas Kalim, and that's an intricate sale that Rabbi Willig worked out, so that Mr. Pavia, I've never met him, but one day I'll meet him and I'll see the guy who owns a lot of my Balabatim's Kalim, and he purchases the Kalim every single day that are sold to him, and then he lends them back to you. After Pesach, the deal's off. After Pesach, they're back yours, and we have to deal with it. Alternatively, Rav Shechter said, if you don't need the keli till Pesach, so then when you fill in your mechiras chametz, so it says groceries, toiletries, medicines, other, it says there, put down the new Amazon item that I just got, the new whatever that I just got, and it gets sold to the guy. And again, Ray Willig will end up speaking to Mr. Brown and borrowing it back. So those are easy solutions. Again, I want to be very careful and point out that to the credit of the leadership of our mikveh, and the tremendous research has been done, and the mikveh is a place that is chlorinated and it's washed down frequently, and they have a great system in place so that people can stay away from each other. No, but afal pi kein, person is nervous. The person has their right to be nervous in the situation, and you can say certainly a person doesn't take extra trips outside, so then you should not take an extra trip. In this case, you shouldn't take an extra trip. You should, again, I would want you to ease on the buying. Instead of, maybe it's a good year to do disposable, maybe it's a good year to buy cheap. You know, it's Mr. Shem, we hope next year is going to be, we be back where we and more comfortable. So, but again, that's if there's anything unclear about that, please let me know. But that's I hope it's clear about the way that we can deal with the tevilas kelim. I'm just looking at what else in the chat. Oh, I see. Wait a second. Oh, here we go. Okay. If anybody has questions, while I see if we have, if a person has opened packages of chametz, is it better to get rid of before Pesach itself? So the answer is that as far as the halacha is concerned, so it's not a problem to sell open packages. why was there a preference not to sell packages? Because if a person, if all you had was a half a bag of Cheerios and half a bag of pasta, no, so to sell your chametz for to sell chametz gomer for nothing, to rely on an item and a halacha, which we don't like doing, because we don't like doing end runs in halacha. To do an end run so you don't have to go crazy and go through your whole toilet chest and make sure, to do an end run so you don't have to read the label of every single bottle, that's a good idea, because most of those things don't require any anachamizik anyways. So to do an end run to save yourself aggravation, nervousness, anxiety, work, 100%. But to do an end run in halacha so you have a... So you're going to have three stale dough cookies after Pesach. No. So that's where the practice came up. I'm not selling open packages. Some people question whether Mr. Brown wants to buy open packages. So that in itself, I think he would be okay with that. I don't think. Again, I would say the same thing. If it makes the sale into a silly sale, not a good thing to do. But if I'm selling expensive whiskey, and if I'm selling pasta, and then I want to throw in a bag of potato chips and a bag of Cheerios so that the morning after Pesach, my child will be a happy kid. Happy kids are, that's worth an end run in halacha. Okay. A shelf of cookbooks. So, yeah, so can I wipe them down and use them on Pesach? They have stains and crumbs. But if I go through them and clean the crumbs, the answer is yes. If you have a cookbooks, so then that go through them. If they've been hanging around the chametz, so then go through them carefully, and again, not driving yourself crazy. Shake them out, look through them, wipe them down, and I would strongly want you not to have them on the Pesach, the counters, while you're cooking for Pesach. I would strongly think that it pays to have them a little bit away from the Pesach. If they're on the chametz, if you put them on the chametz, the counters, then get a Pesach extender for the cookbooks, or have them on the other side, or take a copy of them, take a picture of them, and then. But the answer is they can be brushed down, they can be looked at, and there's no reason why then you can't access them and use them and work with them on Pesach. Okay. So I did leave some things open because when it comes to products, I don't memorize the product lists for Pesach. So I don't know if you'd want a rabbi that memorizes product lists for Pesach. So if you have any questions about products, please be in touch with me, text me, and call me, and I'll see what I can find out for you. Good. Any other questions? Oh, good. So let me clarify this, because this was not... the two more questions I want to address. Two very good questions. Okay, one it seems that it was I was not clear our last time that we met, and that is the 24 hours before koshering. So then there cannot be any hot applications to the surface. No hot water. No hot solids. All right. Cold water and cold solids are allowed to be on counters and on pots. Right? You have a sink, and cold water was used in that sink. That does not interrupt the 24 hours. The reason why I think that I wasn't clear is because I the way that faucets are nowadays, that they easily slip from meat to milk. So if it's not from hot to cold, I think it's unwise to try to use those faucets with cold water in the 24-hour period, because I know from my own experience it very often just slip onto the hot side. So that's why I strongly encourage, and also if you Baruch Hashem have a busy home, and you don't sort of knock off the faucet, the sink, then it's Baruch Hashem, a busy home. It's very hard to keep a faucet not being used, not being used for hot, right? Because, so that's why I think the better practice is that if before koshering, tie a bag around the faucet, put a bag around the handles. If you're really, really courageous, you can turn the hot water off from down below, but I would hesitate to do that. So, as far as the halacha is concerned, if it's cold water, cool water that is on a surface, a cold item, a non-hot item, that would not interfere with the 24-hour period. All right, so I apologize if I wasn't clear about that. The aerator at the end of this, at the end, I believe that you can just pour hot water over it, but I would want to see, I have a certain picture of an aerator, which may not be what you have. So I'd rather you take a picture of the item of the aerator and then send it to me. Okay, if one puts things away in a drawer or closet that gets closed after Pesach and includes items that were sold, but in the middle of Yom Tov, and realize they need something from that closet, can they open it to get it? The answer is yes. All right, so let's explain that. Any chametz in Pesach that you have sold to a non-Jew should be distanced from usage. What's distanced? It should be in something where there is a mechitz of 10 tzvachim between you and the item. If it's a closet, there should be a piece of tape over the closet, so you know. You're reminded to put some string around the handles, and that is again chametz and Pesach. You want to put it this. You want to put it. Make sure that there is a wall between you and the chametz. It can be created by plastic bags. It can be created by anything, but you want something that is about 36 inches high, and that should separate you from the chametz. Okay, now. If you have to access something there, and that area has been leased to the guy also. Nevertheless, if you have to access something there, you are allowed to access something there. The mechitz is going to remind you, right? And the guy doesn't mind if you go into the area that's leased to him. So the answer is yes. However, it's not the kind of thing that you should be spending any significant time over there. You go in, you get it, you come out, right? But it shouldn't be a situation where you're actually spending time next to the chametz. All right? Okay, I think we covered that. Correct, this is a very good question. If you sell a new item instead of toiling, so then after Pesach, you are chayiv, you should toivel it. There is a debate as to whether you make a bracha when you toivel it. So when you sell it to the guy, and then you borrow it back from the guy. So after Pesach, it depends exactly what happens. If what happens is that Mr. Pavlia sells it back to you, then you have to do tefillah with a bracha. If what happens is Mr. Pavlia says, let him continue borrowing and never mind. Then you would be totally without a bracha. Because then, so I don't know, it's not clear to me from the arrangement with Mr. Pavi. If you sell it with Rabbi Willig, Erev Pesach, Mr. Brown, then he will sell it back to you and then you do tefillah. Mr. Pavi, have to research that to find it. But that's the issue. If the guy sells it back, then you have to tell it. If the guy just says, I don't know, maybe I'll meet at a wedding, I don't know who you are, then it's tefillah without a bracha. If one was mafkir it, then one takes it, so then again that would be tefillah without a bracha, because it comes into your rishus, not from a guy, from hefker.
The other concern, Rabbi Neuberger, is that some people that are not toveling it is because they're afraid to tovel it now. Right. So after Pesach, if we're still on the same restrictions, they would have to remember to put it aside before putting it away for Pesach to tovel it at a later date.
Right. So let's be clear. So the if we're still in the present state after Pesach, right? So then I don't think that we're going to, then Tvilas Kelim is not going to be an option for us, because we are investing so much to keep the Kelim Mikveh clean. We're doing that for Pesach. But we're not going to invest ourselves that way, I think, after Pesach. After Pesach, if things have not gone back, so then we will assume that the Goy still owns it and is lending it back to us, and we can use it. My thinking is that most of these items are going to be Pesachtik. Someone should put a little note on it when it puts it away to remind us to tell it next year.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, this is a nice question to end up with. 1 second. Okay. So, yes, the answer is if after Pesach we want to use this for Chomenstik and we are not yet, and we're still in any way limiting our activities, so then I would say do not go to the Kelim Mikveh and use it until further notice. Do you have to cover the front of glass cabinets at Kedin Chomezik dishes? So there is some practice. I think it is based on an understanding of Bali Roi Motze, but it is not necessary. It is not necessary. It is necessary to put a piece of tape over the cabinet so you remember not to go there. It is necessary to put a string over it. It is not necessary to cover them. With regard to microwaves, must one be 100% certain that it was not used for cooking if you are pretty sure it's sufficient? The answer is yes. If you're pretty sure, that is sufficient. The reason for that is that not kashering the microwave is a chumrah, because we want to respect Rav Moshe's position of not kashering plastic. But if I have a suffix whether I ever used it in such a way that it requires kashering, so then we can take a leniency on our reverence, not a reverence for Rav Moshe, but our reverence for his position. And there are other reasons as well, because scientifically, the way that a microwave works is that theoretically the walls are not supposed to get hot, because it's only supposed to heat up the water in the item itself. In fact, when the microwaves were first made, for the manufacturer, there were Rabbanim who thought that a microwave would not require kashering at all, because they read the science books. The science books said that the walls don't get hot. Then the Baal HaVatim told them the walls do get hot. So then the rabbis went back and evaluated microwaves in a way that we evaluate almost all our stoves. Correct. That if that when you put your kelim away for Pesach, if they still belong to Mr. Pavia, so then, or Mr. Brown, so put a piece of paper on them and say, either say it belongs to Mr. Brown or Mr. Pavia, or say that it requires tefillah. Okay, but I wanted to finish up with the following question. My husband wants to know if all his svarim that he uses in the dining room table during the year and have all touched the tablecloth that had chametz on it, can those then be used at meals and Pesach if he makes sure that they are clean? So the minhag Yisrael is not so. The minhag Yisrael is that first of all, the minhag Yisrael is that between Purim and Pesach, one does not bring svarim to the table. That's number one. Number two, it tries very, very hard to keep them off the table, not on the table during a meal. Okay. Then once the svarim that we have used at the table, so if they're used regularly, like a bench or so, that we put away, box them up and put away. If it's something that it's my gracious, if it's my shmoy, it's my yikra, all right, so then if I know I brought it to the table, then you should look at it and look it over and make sure that it's no chametz sticking to it. And I always think that if a sefer closes, then there could not be kazayas chametz inside. So the but just have a quick look. But those svarim should not be on a Pesach table during the meals. I think that's cutting it too close for comfort, for two reasons. One reason is because he met some chametz from the there may be some chametz on the sefer. Very close, it shouldn't be there. But we would not do that with a keli. We wouldn't take a keli that's been used on chametz de keli and then unkasher it and use it on a Pesach thing. And then also for shalom bayis reasons, because chances are this gentleman's wife has worked very, very hard to make a Pesachtik Yom Tov and free of any kind of chametz, and has worked extremely hard that the table should be far, far from any kind of chametz. So then to bring a sefer that's been sitting in the chametz on a Pesachtik table, so then would legitimately aggravate one's wife. And for that reason alone, one shouldn't do that. One should have used them when one is not eating. And if and when nowadays, you can always take a Xerox a page. And if you need to have a page of a safer mamish during eating, all right. Or again, you can always look at it in a different room and come back. But they shouldn't be on the table while one's eating on. And Pesach. So I wanted to finish up on a such a nice note.
In terms of count caps, the whole...
Again, I couldn't hear. Please say it again. I'm sorry. Jessica, it didn't come through.
Oh, hello?
Hello?
Oh.
Okay, you're on.
Question? Okay. Yeah. No, I was just asking if there was a concept of waiting the 24 hours if you're covering your countertops. Once you clean them very well, do you still
Yes, you know, if you're covering, there is no need to wait 24 hours.
Okay.
The 24-hour period is only when you are kashering with purging. Kashering with purging or with a light fire. But if you're kashering with, if you're kashering like in a self-cleaning oven, or if you're covering, then there's no requirement of waiting 24 hours.
Rabbi Neuberger, do you have to wait 24 hours if you put an insert in a sink, or could you just clean it and put the insert in?
Good question. I haven't dealt with inserts in such a long time.
I'm very old-fashioned.
In other words, you're not kashering, you're just putting an insert inside.
Right. The only thing I'm kashering is the actual, the top part.
Yeah. The answer is no. If you are putting an insert in, then I don't think you need 24 hours. But on anything you are kashering, you would need 24 hours.
Thank you.
Okay, so again, in the next few days, I will try to be as available as possible. If I don't pick up the phone in the mornings, I'm still teaching. And so the mornings are hard for me to pick up the phone, but you can leave messages. And then in the afternoons and evenings, I will try very hard. If I don't pick up the phone, it's probably because I'm in another phone call or in the middle of a meeting, but I will try to return and get back to you as soon as we can, whether it's texting or emails. My WhatsApp, I'm not yet so up in it yet. I have a Seder. I do voicemails, text, and then emails. So, and if something which is urgent, so then please text me and say it's urgent, and we'll try, Mr. Shem, to interrupt what we're doing and try as hard as we can to be responsive. So, and if you're up late and you can put a notice to how late I can call, it could also make it a little bit easier. And remember that we still have till Shabbos Agudah and after Shabbos Agudah, we have time. So we should be able to respond to everybody's questions. And it's for me, it's always very inspiring. First of all, asking a question, asking a shaila, something which is very precious. It, Moshe Rabbeinu, our first meeting of Moshe Rabbeinu after Matan Torah, something before Matan Torah, was when he was answering questions. And Yisro got upset with him. And Yisro said, why are you on your feet morning tonight? Why are you answering questions? And Moshe Rabbeinu said to Yisro, what are you talking about? The Jews are coming with Rosh to ask questions. So when a person asks a shayla, that's a very, very precious moment to the Ribbono Shel Olam. You see from Moshe Rabbeinu how much he wanted to be available to answer questions. Yisro had to prevail upon him to work out a system that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to receive the Torah, so Chazal say he made sure that Hur and Aaron were there to answer questions. So the process of asking a shayla shows such a sense of bikush, and Kadosh Baruch Hu is so appreciative of that sense of bikush, and that's why he put the story of Moshe answering questions right away in Parshas Yisro before Matan Torah. And we say every morning about the simcha that Mevakshei Hashem brings. And there was one Talmud of that asked Rabbi Yoshev, but if somebody's not clear to me, how often should I ask? So Rabbi Yoshev said, Ad sheyetzi asafik milivcha, until it's clear to you, until you don't have any sveikas. So you should always feel comfortable to ask something that Rabbanim are very excited about when he can answer shaylas. And as I was thinking about last week's meeting and this meeting, and especially in this situation where this is our opportunity to spend time together, this is like the, as Rabbi Cohen said, like the shul lobby, so to speak. So it's an opportunity that is very important to us. And in addition, it has to be something that will be a great tefillah through Ribbono Shel Olam. It has to be that Hakadosh Baruch Hu sees that with all this going on, Klal Yisrael wants to prepare Pesach with the iconos, with precision, with having his concern, his rotzayin, his Pesach uppermost in mind. It has to be a great, great schus for all of us, for our community, for our friends and our family, and certainly for those who are struggling. They all have in this chus a refuah shleima, and we all only have good news about their continued recovery. So I thank you very much, and I look forward to being in further conversation about Kadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.